Well, or that was the foxhole one.
That was the foxhole one.
Hello, welcome everybody out there. This is Tom, W5KUB. You're watching Amateur Radio Roundtable. Tonight is February the 5th, and I think we got a great show lined up for you tonight. We got Farhan from all the way from India. We made him get up this morning early, a little earlier than he normally gets up, but he's with us. Let's see what's going on here. We broadcast our audio on international shortwave on 5130. Kilohertz. If you're listening out there on WBCQ, send us an email to tom@w5kub. Let us know how you're receiving the station, and if you're hearing us, give us a signal report. Interested in hearing from you. tom@w5kub.com. Let's see what else is going on. We've got our podcast, our audio podcast up now, and it's carried just about by every podcast company out there. So look for Amateur Radio Roundtable on all the podcast carriers. And before I go to our remote co-host here, just want to mention, last Tuesday during net, we had a great net last Tuesday and this Tuesday, about 30 check-ins. But I met a guy on there, AG3I, and sent me a nice note last week. He checked into the net, and he's been off the air since 1979. And he checked in and has kind of been following the show, and he says it's due to our efforts on the show, and the show motivated him to get back on the air, and he thanks everybody here. He's got an HW100 that he had in 1979, and that's what he's using right now. And he checked in the net tonight. I recommended for him to find a local club, so he found a local club near Pittsburgh tonight, and Marty was actually at the club meeting tonight, and from the club he checked into our 40-meter net. So hello, Marty, and if you're watching this on a replay, we say hi to you there. All right, so that takes care of that. Hey, let's jump around this thing here and see how Miss Katie's doing out there. Katie, are you with us?
I am with you tonight, Tom. Hello to you and to everyone out watching live, and then when you come back and watch it recorded. It's a beautiful, cold, freezing day here in Sundance, Wyoming, and very much looking forward to some warm weather at Orlando Hamcation this weekend.
Okay, well, great. I notice I'm not in a chat room, so I have no visibility now with the chat room at all. Are you still in it, Katie?
Yep, I'm still there, keeping an eye on people. Everybody's excited we have our very special guest on tonight.
Yeah. Okay, well, great.
People ditched other important television programs.
Well, you and Josh, everybody, just help us kind of watch if there's any questions in here. I can't. Do three things at one time and log back in, so I'm not going to worry about it right now. So, hey, great, Katie. And, hey, we're going to see you this weekend at Hamcation.
Yes, indeed. I'll be getting there tomorrow night and setting up with the gang and then working the show all weekend long. It's a lot of fun and really looking forward to seeing everyone.
Well, now, you've got a lot of snow out there, don't you?
Oh my gosh, it just hasn't stopped snowing. It's about every day now we still have some snow, and even when it's just a little bit light and what have you, but there's still probably about 3 to 4 feet in my yard now, and it comes about halfway up the propane tank, and my neighbor has an old car that they parked in their backyard, and it's about up to their, you know, the halfway up the side window now.
Oh, so man.
It's getting deep, but it's always a good thing for the springtime. We like to get lots of snow here because it's needed for all the grass to grow in the spring.
Well, Thursday.
Bonus. I thought I'd turn the volume down.
Thursday. Thursday here is going to be 70 degrees, and then we're going to get snow Thursday night, but we'll be gone from here by the time that happens. Isn't the weather just crazy?
Yeah, we're supposed to be about 8 degrees here at home and about 81 in Orlando, so that's it's really hard to kind of dress for for being here. And as you can see, I'm wearing a turtleneck sweater today. And then in a couple of days, it's going to be, you know, t-shirt, shorts, and flip-flops weather.
All right. Well, let's see what Josh has got going. Hey, Josh, what have you been up to, man?
Well, Gong Hei Fa Choi, everybody. It's Chinese New Year, Lunar New Year. So we've got a lot of people in the background having some fun. So I'm judiciously activating and unactivating my mute button.
Did a video
not too long ago on working the FT2DR on wires in its node mode, PDN mode. That's a lot of fun. I've been having fun with that, trying to work from my home to my car to my FTM400, which is really cool. That's been a fun little thing because that just came out recently, that cable kit that Yaesu is selling. So fun to play around with.
Well, so let me ask some. I missed it. Did you say Gong Hei Fa Choi? What did you say a minute ago?
Gong Hei Fa Choi. Gong Hei Fa Choi, Cantonese for Happy New Year.
Yeah, maybe
I know it in a couple different languages, too.
Yeah, maybe my pronunciations isn't very good. I'm Southern. I say Gong Hei Fa Choi. But anyway, I spent a little time in China, and I spent a lot of time in Hong Kong over the years. And this is New Year's there, and guess what? You're supposed to give out happy money. I had people that worked for me over there, and they were all expecting me to give out happy money to them.
Lacey, the red envelopes, right?
Yeah, I have to give my envelope happy money. Oh, wow. All right. Well, hey, we got something, a little video you're going to have for us in a few minutes. Let's jump around to Dave real quick, see what Dave's got going here. Dave? We've missed you. You hadn't been here the last couple of weeks, man.
I know. I didn't make it the 1 week because I was in Quartzfest, and then the next one was, I think, the day after we got home. Things were still a little bit of a mess. We went down to Quartzfest. This was my first time. I took my wife with me. She had a chance to get some real quality time with her sister, who was also wintering in the area, and so she enjoyed that. Now that I've been through a Quartz Fest, I know what to do differently the next time I go and to enjoy it even more. It was, I don't know why the ARRL doesn't just call it a ham fest. They call it a specialty operating event.
Really? I didn't know
and
that.
It was a lot of fun. I'll tell you a little bit more about it the next go around here.
Okay. All right. Very good. Well, let's do this. Let's go ahead and get your update and give us the information there. Let's do that now, and we'll do Josh's little video, and then we'll bring in our special guest tonight. So let's go ahead. Let's talk about your trip down to Quartzfest.
Well, this was our first time. For the first time, have a trailer, a travel trailer. And so the Quartzfest, the thing that is unique about it is it meets in the middle of the desert with zero infrastructure, and everybody comes in their travel trailer or their tent or their motor home or something like that. And the people who come to this are real hardcore about operating out of their motor homes. One of the things I was looking for was what types of antennas people were using. I thought I'd see buddy poles or something like that, but no, the standard antenna seemed to be a collapsible aluminum flagpole that they could put up high off the rear bumper of their truck and then throw a few radials on the ground and with the tuner get on HF with that. That seemed to be, I'd say at least 80% of the people there had that as their particular antenna. So that was quite enlightening for me. There were some luminaries there. Gordon West was there. He ran a couple test sessions. So we ended with more hams than we started. And Randy K7AGE was there. I got to meet him for the first time. He's a lot taller than he looks like in his videos. He's way up above me, that's for sure. Also ran into Ray Novak of ICOM, talked with him. It was just a grand time. I wore my OG shirt that has the OG logo on it that week. Actually, I brought five of them, so I changed my clothes than once. And ran into a lot of Augies, a lot of people who follow my channel, and just had a good time with a lot of them. I tried to test the MFJ Octopus foolishly tried to put the thing up by myself. What I should have done was get on my channel and put out a call on Monday or Tuesday for people to come by and help, because you've got 7.5 pounds of antenna on top of a 20-foot pole. So that's like 150 foot-pounds of torque trying to hold that thing up. And needless to say, I couldn't. I did bend it. So I'm going to do it a little bit differently here at home. I did get it up. I did get a little testing. I did have one QSO on it using my little QRP Labs QCX radio. And the person, I'm sure I was doing this long path, the person I was talking to was right in the camp. So just about blew my ears off. There's no AGC on that radio. I met great people. The facilities there, this was new, first time for us to be so-called boondocking, meaning camping with utterly no support. Mm-hmm. Discovered how quickly our water goes. I had to tote the trailer into town to get it refilled and emptied and all of that sort of thing. So we're learning. I would do it again in a heartbeat. It is a ways away. It took us 2 days to get there. But it was great because I got to enjoy ham radio and my wife got to enjoy her sister. And it was, she said, this is the most time she's had with her sister since high school. So it was very good. The forum slots were not all full. There were a number of empty slots. I didn't volunteer to speak or anything. And I don't know, maybe I will next time. It was just enough fun going around meeting people. Randy put up several videos. How he managed to do it from his trailer, I don't know. I put up two videos, one on the unboxing and the startup of the generator, and one on the octopus antenna. And as it turns out, there's somebody else, I think it was W6USA or K6USA, put up another video on the octopus. He actively looked for me, but couldn't find me, and I didn't know he was doing one, and maybe we could have met somewhere and done that together, handle that a little bit better. One thing that was very nice, I went down there without a mast, and I mentioned that in my post before I went down there, and somebody gifted me five of those 4-foot sections mm-hmm. of military surplus mast mm-hmm. To put up. And I've got their name. I didn't get it into the video because I didn't have it, but that person commented on it, so I was able to give them credit, and I really appreciate that. All in all, it was a very friendly crowd. It was a little windy the first couple days. It was just wear a little hoodie here to stay warm during the day. It gets kind of cold at night. If you go into Quartz Fest is a town of about 3,400 people that during the winter gets 1.2 million visitors. Wow. So you can imagine the place was crowded. I looked all over for Josh, but didn't see him anywhere there. So it was a good event. I'm glad I did it. I took very little video myself. I did put up a report of it, and I made a reference to K7AGE's channel because he put up so many videos about Quartz Fest. So that's my report. If I can do it again next year, I think I will. I'd like to figure out a way to get down to the Yuma Ham Fest again. That's another 90 miles down the road from Quartz Fest, almost due south.
I've got friends from Dayton that go to that Yuma every year.
Mm-hmm. And there. Hey, Dave, I got a question.
Yeah.
Oh, so I've seen various videos and photos from Quartz Fest over the years, and it seems that a lot of times people, they just come from their campers. Feedback. you know, kind of in a central area, maybe for those or the forums. But I wonder, do people wander around knocking on doors, or do people have calls, you know, like QSL cards on their doors, so you know who they are? Kind of like when you're at a hand, like at, you know, Hamvention at the Crown Plaza, you always have people that they always have their QSL cards on doors, so you know where they are. But I always kind of wondered, there's so many people there. How do you ever find anyone?
Well, I don't know. You'd have to pick a spot. There's the central point. They've got some bulletin boards that are on posts in the ground. It seems to be kind of the meeting point.
Okay.
I was going to put a sign up on my trailer, but Flat ran out of time. And I did not see them on other trailers. I think the central area is quite compact, and we made the mistake of camping right by the central area because I can't walk long distances very well.
Right.
And unfortunately, that meant dust, all the people going by. So the actual number of campers, there were over 1,000 people registered there.
Wow.
And those are the people that they registered after they got there. There wasn't a bunch of pre-registers who didn't show. And so it really spreads out a lot. But every day they have a forum at 3:45. It's sort of the commander's call for the thing. And they give out tickets to everybody. And I was trying to count the lowest ticket to the highest ticket. And there were at least 250 people there to each one of those. So it was a lot of people did come to the forums. They had PA systems set up because otherwise you'd never hear outdoors. They did try to put a screen there with a fairly bright projector, but there was still too much light. You could hardly see a thing on the screen.
So, hey, Dave, the week before, I think it rained a whole lot there at Quartz Fest. How was the weather while you were there?
Dry, completely dry, brilliant sunshine every day, not a cloud in the sky, a little windy. Yeah, I saw some stuff about the rain they had there. They had quite the gully washer, literally.
Yeah.
We made sure we parked up a little bit and not in any of the little ravines because you can get flash flooding out there in a heartbeat.
Oh, I bet. Yeah, I did watch part of your video and saw the bag of military mast, and I recognize that because we've acquired quite a bit of that, and we use that for field day for our when we're throwing up antennas and that stuff. I tell you, if you can ever come across them at a ham fest, scoop it up because that stuff is worth its weight in gold, I tell you.
Oh, it's wonderful stuff. Our club has some that we use for club events, and I'd like to get more of it, but these people gifted me that and some other stuff that I needed, and so I could get the octopus in the air. My big mistake was not asking early on for help.
Right. Yeah, that was quite a project to do by yourself. I was watching, going, oh, man, he needs another two sets of hands at least.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I don't think I showed the part in the video where I actually dropped the thing.
I wouldn't remember that.
Yeah, it was a good event. I'd really like to do it. It is, by and large, limited to people who have RVs. There are a small number of hardy souls who tent camp. And, but they're, you know, I'm going to guess 10 out of 1,000. Other people were in RVs. The age of the crowd was, I think, consistent with that. They, by and large, tended to be retirees. And those, a lot of people who live, actually live in their motorhomes. And they just are itinerant, go from place to place, go north in the summer and south in the winter.
Great.
All right. Well, Dave, thank you very much for telling us about it. I've never been out there.
Yeah, you have to try it.
I need to try sometime.
Yeah, the big ham fest I'm going to try and make sure I get to this year is Pacificon. That seems to be a really big deal. And Josh, you probably know about that.
I do. I'm thinking about trying to make a run for that too. My problem is always the season for all the hamventions and make it difficult for me to get out there.
Yeah.
Pacificon's pretty close, though, all things considered, to me.
Where is it, actually?
Isn't it Reno? Outside Reno?
Reno?
No, Pacificon is up in Oakland area.
Oh, that's Oakland. That's it. Yeah.
Yeah, so that's even closer. In California.
Yeah, shoot, I'll take the train.
Yeah, that one's in October, so.
Yeah.
All right, well, hey, thanks a lot, Dave. And I've got something I want to share with Katie here for a second. Katie,
Yes, sir.
Do you remember, you know, we did the Morristown Ham Fest a few weeks ago on a Saturday.
Right.
And one of the guys checked in on that tonight, N4SCG. That right. may sound familiar to you because he's the one that won the wattmeter we gave away.
Oh, no kidding. Oh, yeah, that's great.
So he got to see us on the big 75-inch screen, and he said that's the first right. time he heard about our show.
Right.
And he has gone back to Virginia, and he's been watching us ever since. So,
oh, super. So How cool is that?
We picked up a new visitor to the show there, a loyal visitor. That was N4CSG Chris. I think he's in Virginia.
That sounds all about right. Very cool. Awesome, Chris.
All right. Well, look, I'm gonna talk to Josh here a second. Let's see, Josh. Josh, let me get your name up here, Josh, so everybody know who you are there. I'm sure everybody
Henry
knows
to a Crash Course is an easy
sure
one now on YouTube. We've got the name changed over a little bit.
Let me put that on there. That way people will be able to find you if they're looking for you. Yeah. So, hey, Josh, you know, there's a lot of things going on, man. Technology has changed a lot, and we can't live without things like the internet. I mean, I'm guilty of that. Boy, when the internet goes down, you panic, don't you? I mean,
yeah, no, we use it for everything now, and it's even in our refrigerators, right? It tells you when you need to buy more milk.
Yeah, it's you can't live without it now. And just to think back when I got my license 50 years ago, we didn't even have computers then. That's how old it was then. We actually mm-hmm. lived in caves back then. But, you know, nowadays, like you say, your refrigerators, TVs, everything is on the internet, and you can't live without it. So
yep.
there's this new bunch of hams coming up that we count on the internet now. And, Josh, I got a little video you did. I'm gonna throw it on here.
Do that. Let's watch
yeah,
it.
Yeah, let's talk about this for
I
a second.
I did a little collab with another YouTuber.
Yeah, this was with our friend there, K6UDA, who has K6UDA Radio. He may even yep. be in the chat room tonight. I see him quite often in the chat room, but that's Bob. And mm-hmm. he has a site.
Oh, he was the guy who did the other video on the octopus.
Okay.
Correct. Yeah, I was going to mention. I unfortunately didn't go to Quartz Fest, but Bob was there, and I believe his fell over. So you're in good company. If yours also fell over, the wind took it out.
So, hey, I'd just like to just let everybody know, hey, check out Bob's page there. It's K6UDA Radio. It's on YouTube. And he's called an elder with an attitude, I think is what he goes by. You know, he's not too serious. He doesn't get too deep in stuff. He's real funny to watch. I've watched a lot of his videos. And I'll tell you, they're a little bit rated a little bit more than us. I mean, he's more, we're PG. He's more, what do you think, Josh, PG-13 or?
Yeah, PG-13. Yeah,
I think he's PG-13 PG. To be safe on his videos. But they're pretty funny, some of them. And so anyway, this is a clip that you did with Bob, and I want to run this real quick. It's about 2 minutes long, so let me get it going here.
Yeah, this is my.
This is Josh KI6NAZ, also known as Hoss Nossi. Bob asked me to answer the question, "How are millennials killing ham radio?" I've got one example for him. A millennial is basically somebody that reached adulthood in somewhere between the year 2000 and 2010. I myself qualify as an elder millennial because I reached adulthood, turned 18, in the year 2000. Millennials remember what the world was before the internet, and now looking backwards with all we have today, we never want to be without the internet again. Hence, the millennial ham radio operator. Hey, how's it going? Did you hear the last ham radio store is closing in Minnesota?
Yeah, that's a bummer.
You don't care about that? No, last store, Minnesota, no more ham radio stores.
I mean, why would I? Why don't just buy online? It's so easy. But I mean, don't you like going hands-on with the radio? Don't you like talking to people? I mean, why? Stores are so expensive now. I mean, we've got the internet, we've got reviews, like, you know, K6UDA and Hoshnasi. Hey, what do you got there today? Oh, you know, it's my new DMR HT. It's like a regular HT, but when you talk to the repeater, it talks to the internet digitally. I can talk around the world with this thing. It's amazing. Hey, I didn't tell you. Last night, I worked somebody on 40 meters on CW. He lives in South Dakota. I can finally cross that off my work all states. Now I just need North Dakota. Yeah, that's nice. The bands suck right now. They totally suck. You can't do anything 10 meters, 6 meters. 20 isn't even worth getting out of bed these days. Call me in about 5 years. Oh, whoa, cool. What do you got on the bench today? Oh, yeah. I just finished putting in a case. It's my new DMR hotspot. Really, really cool. Really excited to have this. That's nice. It looks like a tiny Wi-Fi router, right? No, man. It's so much better than that. Remember, you know, my DMR that I was talking about? Well, I had to go all the way, 40 miles away, to connect to that repeater to get to the internet. Now, with this, I can connect across my office and I can get to the internet and talk to people around the world. So you basically use that small device to render all the RF moot. You don't have to go to the repeater or anything. You just go across the room? 10 feet, man. 10 feet, okay? 10 feet. Okay, so let me understand. You got the hotspot, but you still have your DMR configured for all the repeaters in the area, you know, in case something happens, right? You can talk to people, local comms, simplex, whatever? No way, man. I leave this just programmed to my hotspot. I take this with me everywhere. This uses tethering to my cell phone, and I just access Brandmeister if I need to do anything else. So what do you do if the internet goes down? The what goes where now? So don't panic, guys, this is just a little fun. For every millennial out there that loves the internet and loves ham radio internet of things, there's an OM and a soon-to-be OM that loves it too. So anyway, just having some fun. Thanks a lot, K6UDA, for letting me do this. If you're such an internet ham, then why do you have that kit you're building on your desk? Man, don't pin that on me. We shared this. This is your junk. Ain't nobody got time for QRP.
Alright, so... That was interesting. So nobody hadn't got time for QRP. I bet you that Farhan will have something to say about that in just a couple minutes. So Farhan, I want you to remember that. There we go. There's the Hilltopper. All right. Well, Josh, that was pretty neat there. And let me get that echo off. There we go.
Kids screaming in the background. Sorry about that.
I'm sorry. I had your mic turned down. What'd you say?
Very good. No, I said. We had kids screaming in the background, but thanks for playing that. And yes, the QRP radios do work. I do use them.
All right. And hey, look, there's K6UDA in our chat room there. Guys, go visit K6UDA Radio on Facebook. And Bob, I've noticed Bob has been joining us quite often in our Twitter and stuff. He's been talking about us, so we welcome Bob to our crazy flock here, if we can call it a flock. But anyway, that was a cool video. Thanks so much, Josh, for doing that.
Yeah, thanks for showing it again. Appreciate you guys watching.
All right, guys, let's stand by just for 1 second, and we'll be right back. Attention all hams. ICOM knows that ham clubs play a big role in bringing ham communities together to learn from their peers and industry leaders. As a way to give back and to help you on this mission, ICOM has launched a promotion exclusively for ham radio clubs and HamFest that they are involved with. By registering your club, you could also win ICOM swag, a Skype presentation, or for your HamFest, an ICOM booth set up at your ham club. Register now today for your chance to win. Go to www.icomamerica.com/hams. All right, well, we are back. We're back, and I want to talk a little bit about our next guest. Our next guest is Ashar Farhan, VU2ESE. And everybody knows Farhan for his micro BITX and also the famous BITX 40. And And let me bring him in here real quick. Farhan, how are you doing? And are you awake down there?
Hello. Hi, everyone.
Let me get you.
Good morning from India. Yep. It's about 8 a.m. here. And all of you are 5 and 9. I guess a lot of you are in the throes of winter in the U.S. Well, it's winter here, but as you can see, the winter is not too bad. Good to catch up with you, Dave, Katie. Hi, Josh. Good to meet up with you finally. I've been following your ham radio crash course on YouTube for a while now.
Thank you.
And Farhan, yeah, it's winter here one day, but it's summer here the next day. It's 70 degrees today. It's going to be 70 Thursday, and it's going to snow Thursday night.
Oh, my God.
Well, you know, I think Dave has built several of your radios. I have built several of them from the early days of the your BITX 40 that had the what voltage controlled oscillator in it. And then we built our own Arduino DDS for it. And then you came out with one with the Arduino DDS VFO, which was much better than the one we did. And then, man, and then you surprised us with the micro BITX. You want to give us a little history how you got started with those?
Well, BITX was actually pretty easy to do. What had happened was that my friend Anil, who is in Sweden, so he and I were in a little business together, and another partner of ours was flying in from the U.S., and the new book of Wes, Rick, and Bob, The Experimental Methods in RF Design, had just come out. So Ehsan carried that book over for us, and we were very excited, you know, to have our own copies of this book. And I was, you know, almost, you know, drinking from the fire hose, so to say, with that book that entire week. And on my flight back to India, which was a fairly long flight, almost 11 hours, so with I just sketched this circuit together, you know, inspired by the EMRFT and putting all the blocks which were there together. So when I came back, in about 2 days' time, I had the BITX going. So that was actually an easier rig to do. The micro BITX was much more tougher, and it continues to be a very tough rig to handle because it's a general coverage receiver, a general coverage transceiver. It's really ambitious, and we were trying to pack all that into something which people can put together for $100. People can still put together for even less if they, you know, scratch build it. But the whole idea was to do an all HF rig which could do SSB and CW. So, you know, but there are challenges in doing a multi-band rig, because all multi-band rigs, as Rick Campbell has famously said, are compromises, because you're not having enough you know, enough filtering, etc., etc., and those problems continue. But the good thing about both these radios is that they are open source in the sense that I do not own these designs. The software is open source, so even that's actually very modifiable. And one characteristic that I've been trying to figure out, you know, in all these radios is to keep the complexity minimal so that people can get it as soon as they see the circuit. They say, oh, yeah, I understand this. So that's in a nutshell about both these radios.
Well, you know, it's a very it's a very simple layout, the way you've laid it out in the diagram. And if people want to see this, they need to go to HF Signals, HF Sig. Is it HFSIGS.com?
Both work now, HF Signals as well as HF Sigs.
And there's a lot of information on there, even information on your diagrams and how to wire it up and troubleshooting and all those kind of things. And guys, what this is particularly the latest one here, the micro BITX, is I guess an all mode transceiver, 80 through 10 meters, I guess, right?
Yeah,
and you know. And it comes with your tuning what do you call it? It's not a pot. Well, it is a pot on this one, isn't it? Or is it a
No, it's a decoder. We have a complete rotary encoder. So
it's an encoder wheel. It comes with the encoder wheel and the volume control and all the jacks you need and the plugs and everything. All you have to do is find a box. He even sends you the microphone element. So all you got to do is find a box and you build this in there. And you know what I like about it so much for him? It's customizable. You can do whatever you want. You can put regulated power supplies in there with it. You can boost the voltage up. You can put a heavier heat sink on, get more power out. There's all kinds of things you can do with it. It's amazing.
Mm-hmm. Actually, one of the best explanations of the rig came from Dave's video where he did a breakdown of what the Micro BITX is all about, and that's where I send people to. When they keep asking me about the rig, I say, just go down to Ask Dave and look for the Micro BITX recording.
Thank you.
Now, there's a lot of requests for VHF, UHF in the chat room tonight. Are you thinking anything about that in the future?
Well, I have been dipping into both UHF and VHF of late. And they're very exciting. I don't know whether you followed this, but we put together India's first amateur satellite, which, unfortunately is not doing too well. At that time, I really got into a lot of VHF and UHF work. But, it's a thing where you sort of bootstrap yourself into these modes. And I did not until now have proper instrumentation to handle VHF and UHF. So now that I've built up the capability to do that, I hope that in the future I will start putting some VHF and UHF projects out too. So these days, there's a bit of a divide among the kind of work I do. One, of course, is to satisfy myself and to, figure things out and, build something. And the other is to do projects which other people can build and, measure and have fun with. So those have to be actually simple. They can't be too complicated. At the same time, they should be very flexible and they should be fun to build and use. So I have done a couple of things. I built a UHF to VHF transponder. But really, the thing to do is to look at something called DSP-10. I don't know how many of you have really looked at this rig, which is designed by Bob Larkin, who's the third writer of EMRFD. That's actually a fabulous rig, because what happens when you go to UHF and VHF is there are so many modes. You have to do FM, of course CW, SSB are there, but there are a lot of other weak signal things as well. So then it makes sense for you to switch over to DSP, at least in the back end, which is what the DSP-10 did. It's really a fabulous rig, and I've corresponded with Bob quite a few times, and that's actually one of the things which I'd like to reboot both for 70 and 145 megahertz.
Okay. My first contact, let me tell you, my first contact on a BITX 40, I didn't even have it in a cabinet. I had the board laying on my desk, and I had the microphone on a little 2-inch piece of wire, and I would bend over and talk into it. And I talked to a ham in South Africa, 40 meters, single sideband, 5 watts, I think. South Africa from Tennessee. That was my first contact. I didn't make any more contacts on it for a while. A month later, I talked to South Africa again on it, and a month later, I did it again. So all your BITX 40 did was talk to South Africa. And I'm not even sure.
Harder for country contacts.
Yeah. I'm not even sure that I was running 5 watts then. I just broke it out of the box, and I think it may have been running a lot less than that, but it got through and made a great contact,
You made a video on that, didn't you?
Yeah, there's really a video.
I remember that. That was a lot of fun to hear that.
Yeah, there's a video, and I don't know why I've got half of Katie cut off here. That's probably because I've... That's better.
Screen.
That's a little better, right there. Yeah. Well, anyway, man, this is amazing. And you know what? there's a lot of people, there's still people even in the chat room tonight that maybe have never heard about these neat little projects, and already there are people wanting it right now, you know. Mm-hmm. That's so cool.
I gotta be honest, over on my Discord, which is like our chat room we run for the Ham Radio Crash Course, I started hearing about it over on the chat room, and I started looking into it, and now that I'm listening to a Char talk, it's like I gotta go. Every time I'm on the show, I learn something. I gotta go buy. So there's no exception to this one. I've gotta go get the Micro BidX now. So I think that fits perfectly. I went on a deep dive before I joined today, and there's so many images of people making custom cases.
Right.
And somebody
right.
got a really nice, like an OtterBox case, and they did a flash or a flat top to it, and they take it out and they do soda activations with it, which spoke immediately to me. So I've got to go do something like that. So I'm glad we get to talk to you and hear you talk about the product.
You know, I think
we talked a lot about it in the in the U.S., but in a number of places in the world, the foundation license is limited to 10 watts. And what Farhan has made here is the perfect radio for somebody getting a foundation license, because if you put a little more voltage on the final, a little bigger heatsink, you've got your 10-watt radio for very little money. And I think this is a real inducement for people around the world to, for a very affordable price, get into ham radio and use those foundation licenses. And I think this is a wonderful thing that you've done, and I congratulate you for it. I know here in the U.S. we think, well, we've got 1,500 watts. Well, we're rare. A lot of other countries, you can't even do 250 if you've got your full license. So what I find impressive about this, having spent some time out of the U.S. myself in the Philippines, is that this makes for an affordable radio to get people into ham radio in a productive way, in something that works. It's already tested. I mean, it's just a matter of connecting up a few components, and they're on the air. And that's great, because up until this time, you've had to go with one of the Japanese radios. They're just hundreds to over $1,000. And here's something for $100.
There's a picture of what you get in the kit. Now, Farhan, I know these are shipped from India, and you guys are working very hard to keep the weight down on the shipping package. I think you just about got the weight at maximum right now. But all these parts here are what you get. And you can see that he gives you just about everything you need to make this thing work, except you don't have a speaker and you don't have a power. Well, you just need 12 volts. And if you got earphones, you can plug earphones into it.
Yeah, you know, the thing is, I'd be fooling myself if I said that this is made in India. For example, the toroids that you see come from Micrometals in the USA, right? Uh-huh. I'm not really sure where most of the crystals come from. Then Mauser from Cincinnati actually, you know, ships out most of the components that we use here. The passive components, for instance, the RF-grade capacitors which we use come from there. And of late, we are trying out a source from China, probably known to a lot of builders and DIY hackers, called PCBWay, to see whether that suits us. What we do in India is that we wind coils and we assemble the stuff and test it out. So you must have heard of this, that there's a whole collective of women who do the coil winding. And it's really because of them that we are able to afford to get this going for such a low cost, you know, because they do it pretty cheaply. And that actually makes the entire difference. I mean, if you look at this, there are about 25 coils on that small board, and they are all hand wound. So that actually is a big saving that we have.
So far, I'm looking at the BITX 40 here, and it's showing $59. Is that still the price?
Yes, that's still the price.
And that includes postage all the way from India to your house. Is that right?
Yeah. That includes the postage. I mean we've always thought that we have to be, you know, fairly upfront about what it will cost to have it down at your your shack. Very often you see, you know, some bunch of transistors saying $2, and then you click on it, then you say, okay, there's $20 of shipping attached to it. So we always include shipping, and we sort of keep modifying the shipping. For instance, in the U.S., although we say that we'll post it by the Indian Post, but if we do get a good deal on DHL, we, you know, usually send it off by DHL. I mean, this is not really a large for-profit. I mean, we are not registered as a non-profit, but this is not really a profit-making business, so to say. We have, you know, other things to do, which is why I'm also really slow to respond to certain requests and modifications which need to be done to the rig.
Uh-huh. Now, I don't know how you hold the cost down so much. I mean, you really have reduced the cost in every single part. Hey, on that BITX 40, it must cost you $49 to ship it from India. That means the radio must cost you $10 to make it. You know?
No, that's not true. That's not true, Tom. It costs us about $10 to ship it.
Does it? Okay. Here's the MicroBix, and you've got a price of $129 on the MicroBix, and that includes shipping.
Yeah, which is really unfortunate. I wanted to hold it down to $100, and we tried very hard. And at the risk of outing Ehsan, who basically, you know, runs this on a day-to-day basis, Ehsan and I have had fairly, you know, serious talk about this. And I said, you know, we had promised people that we'll give this for $100. You really can't do this, but what has happened is that the dollar to Indian rupee conversion rate has plunged down, and the duty costs have gone up, etc. So, I mean, there were a number of factors which led to it, you know, escalating by $30. And we also put in more stuff into this. So that's how it, you know, escalated very rapidly from being a $100 radio to being a $129 radio. But, at that price point, I think it's a good starting radio, number one. Number two is, I'm not sure if you've, taken a close look at it, but there are a number of test points that we have marked in the radio now from which you can jump off. For instance, you can add a CW filter if you want right now, and that's actually there on the board. You can change a lot of things, add AGC, take things out. So it's a very flexible radio, you know. It invites you to hack it around, and, you know, if you blow it up, you've blown up about $100, then you can, you know, sort of reboot yourself and then get it back. But it's actually very difficult to even destroy the radio, because everything there costs less than a dollar to replace, whether they are the IRF 510s or whatever.
Yeah. Now, Dave, I think, Dave, you built yours in like a some type of cooking pan, didn't you? You stole it from the kitchen?
I didn't steal it.
Dave's going to get it. He had to get Dave. Dave got permission. I saw somebody trying to make rabbit ears behind me. Like, I don't know. I think Katie might say, "There it is."
This is made on a cornbread pan, so it's just got a place on the top to mount it. I use a very modern, progressive microphone mount. It's my ballpoint pen, and I've got the little key over here on the side, so it's push to talk, and it works great.
Yeah, I have a friend that built one in a pie pan. Here's one I built. I built two in a these old dish TV receivers. They don't want them back, you know. And I took all the guts out of the dish TV receiver. And I built my BITX in a dish TV little case. You know, it's got the little, you know, little metal case, and it's just it was just about the right size. You know.
Yeah. How many people have insisted that you take a look at how they mounted the BITX?
Well, My wife calls it my radio porn. I'm all the time looking at these things, you know, over YouTube. And, you know, she says, oh, he's back to looking at his porn. So, but I really find it very, very interesting, you know, how people mount it. So there's an interesting story I should tell you about a late friend of mine. He passed away just a couple of weeks ago, 2 weeks, I think, Lyndall Parks. Lyndall was suffering from cancer, and that took him down. But he was a great biker, an AC/DC fan, and through his illness, what he did was to box micro-BITXs one after the other. And he's on Facebook, and you can see them. Some of them are really lovely and very lovingly boxed micro-BITXs. You know, some of them have been put into jewel boxes. Some of them have been put into, you know, ammunition cases. So that's what he did. And, you know, the moment he'd finish one box, he'd gift it off to someone and order another one, because he said that's what just, you know, kept him going through his chemo sessions. God bless his soul, but, you know, he was really a great builder.
Well, there's some questions about how they work in CW. I know sideband, they're working fine. You've added CW to it. In fact, even before you added CW to it, a lot of people were already making those mods and putting CW in there. So I saw a thing mentioned about AGC. People already have a little mod for AGC. So it's kind of one of these things where you can add to it. Just add different pieces.
Yeah, I mean, I'm completely blown away by how people manage these things and, you know, think about them. For instance, there is one mod, and it's purely software mod, where you can take this piece of software, where the IF gain is controlled by shifting the second oscillator so that it gets onto the skirt of the crystal filter, you know. It gets onto the skirt of the crystal filter. So that's how you actually attenuate the signal. I could never think of such a hack at all. So a number of people like Allard and Jack, for example, Jack Purdom, they have actually made some really fabulous work on these two radios. And they've really extended the capabilities of what this could do. And, you know, I just, you know, sit back very fascinated about where this goes. What I do consider myself in this whole situation is I have the role of an editor, right? So like that of a journal or something where various people are giving various inputs and you sort of figure out that this is a good one or that's not a good one. This may work for a lot of people or not, and then give the new version. So the new version of micro-BITX is going to be out. In fact, I just got it delivered yesterday. It's lying somewhere in this mess. So that's the fifth version of the micro-BITX. It's got a lot of fixes. There were some problems with the spurs and harmonics. They have all been fixed in this new version, and this new version will be out. It even had some keying clicks, you know. I mean, when you keyed it, there were some keying clicks. That's been fixed as well. So that will be out again, and that's actually purely work of a number of other people who contribute to the project.
So there's how many thousands of these do you think are out there? Do you have any idea?
I think we're almost at 20,000 now.
Yeah.
20,000 of these radios, yeah.
That's amazing. And people have been using them now for quite a while. And, you know, you've touched on the spurious radiation a little bit. What did you do? What are you doing to fix that problem that you guys found?
Yeah, you know, we found the problems and then we found the problem. By that, what I mean is that a couple of us on the micro-BITX list who were fortunate enough to have spectrum analyzers put the, spec-and it and found out that, wow, there were these spurs showing up and harmonics showing up. And for harmonics, you know, it's pretty easy. Just put a more aggressive filter and you're done. But we had no idea where the spurs were coming from, and there were a lot of theories being floated. So the good thing about science is that it always manages to uncover whatever the problem was or whatever the truth is, so to say. So what we did is that we I mean, I started very extensively looking at this, making measurements, etc. And finally, we tracked it down to a very weird source, which is that, you know, it's a dual conversion. So everything from 0 to 30 converts to 45 megahertz up there. And from 45, we again converted down to 12 megahertz. The reason being that the 45 megahertz crystal filters are not good enough for SSB or CW. So they are wider band crystal filters. They're actually used in cordless phones. You know, that's where what they're made for, and they're very cheap. Anyway, so when we were converting back from 45 down to HF, there's an IF amplifier there, which amplifies it. And what that was doing is, it was overloading to the point that it would generate the second harmonic of 45, which is 90 megahertz. And now you have a local oscillator. For example, if you are going to transmit, let's say, at 14 megahertz, then you would have a local oscillator at 59. So that, you know, 59 minus 45 is 14 megahertz. But the second harmonic at 90 megahertz, so you have 90 minus 59, and that was showing as a spur. So we have actually put a low-pass filter there to take the 90 megahertz off. We have changed a couple of transistors there. That was the problem number one. And then the problem number two was that our audio amplifier was not good enough. So for that, we have gone back to the LM386. Let me show you the new board, which doesn't look very different from the old board. I just figured out where it is. So that's the new board. And mm-hmm. what you can see is that there are two small yellow things there. That actually fixes the spurs. And there's a new layout for, it doesn't look new, but there's a new layout for the low-pass filters as well. So that's those are the fixes. And of course, we have the venerable, I don't know how to, this is actually counterpart.
Right here.
Okay, there you go. Yeah, that's the LM386 sitting there, socketed. And you know, so that's the new one with, of course, the old radio. No, so you plug this in. But the interesting thing is this, Tom, that while we were discussing this on the BITX group, and I invite you all to join in, and a lot of us would, you know, keep throwing these things around saying, I got it to minus 40 dBm and I got it to, you know, 45 dBm and the second harmonic is not showing up, and others would be completely clueless about what are they talking about and mm-hmm. How are they managing to measure these. And it turns out that you need about $2,000 worth of equipment to even start measuring this critter, which costs about $100 to make. And that really got me thinking that, you know, if we need to get homebrewing done, if, you know, people need to start figuring out what they're talking about, you need to be able to measure this, right? You measure spurs, measure phase noise, measure IMD. I mean, these are all the stuff that you read about in QST, right? Mm-hmm. What is the IMD of this transmitter, or how are the harmonics doing? How is the distortion, etc.? So I sat down and I've built something which, you know, the home builders will like. Here it is. So it actually works that way,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, there you go.
Right? So this is actually, to begin with, it's an antenna analyzer. So a lot of people might like to just use it as an antenna analyzer. Let me just plug this in and show you what it does.
You've got an awful big knob. You got a very big knob on it.
Well, it's a... yeah, I like big knobs.
Yeah.
So... let me just plug this in somewhere to power. Okay, it powers on from the USB as well. Wow, what's happening here? Okay, there we go. See that?
Uh-huh.
So
there you go. There. Right here.
All right, so that's the thing. And as you can see, this has got a 16:2 display, and you can sort of, you know, turn it around. And so it's an antenna analyzer. So you connect your antenna here, and this is at 14. So let me just connect my there's my, so you can see that I have sort of all right SWR, not too good, but nevertheless, let me just show you that, right? So it can do that, and because it's based on an SI5351, it can go up to 150 megahertz on it, actually up to UHF. But the really interesting part here is this, that if you did this, and you see that there's some menus there. So one of them would actually say SNA. I don't know what you can see. Let me put my glasses back on. Okay, so can you guys see?
Yeah, we can see it. 14.001. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So it does a measurement receiver, and what's called as an SNA, and of course antenna analyzer. So what happens here is that with the measurement receiver, you tune to a particular frequency which you feed in here, okay? And it will read out the signal strength at that particular frequency. So for example, if you are at 7 megahertz and you want to see how strong the harmonic on 14 is, then you tune to 14 and it'll actually read out the harmonic on 14 megahertz. Mm-hmm. And similarly, if you have a transmitter with two tones fed into it, right? And you can tune both the tones to see what the fundamental is. Then you can tune away from it and look at the harmonic distortion, the IMD as well, of that particular transmitter. Or if you've made an amplifier, you could look at the distortion there. You could look at the harmonic. So it's a whole different way of looking at RF. We are usually used to putting an oscilloscope at best on mm-hmm. a signal. But the oscilloscope shows you nothing except that there's something going up and down. You do not know the harmonic content. You do not know the distortion, etc. So it does that. And here, there are two connectors here, right? The second connector actually sends a signal out, which you can loop through any circuit and push it back here. For example, you could put a crystal filter between these two, and it will tell you what the passband of the crystal filter is. So it's really a handy instrument. Mm-hmm. It's a signal generator. It's a sweeper, it's an antenna analyzer, and it's a manual spectrum analyzer. That is, you can manually tune through this and find, get your readings of the spectrum. I'm writing something for a PC which would help you plot this like a regular spectrum analyzer would. So then, that would be there. And this is not very expensive to make. I have the circuit diagram available on my GitHub. Mm-hmm. So, let me just show that to you. It's a very interesting instrument for homebrewers more than regular people. So let me just pull that out.
Well, I have to say, you sold 20,000, but you can count that as 20,001 because I just bought one. Very excited to build it. So thank you.
Yeah. Let me put this out here. Anyway, I'll get this when I... I'm just trying to search for this antenna analyzer section. I have so many files kept over here that... Okay, yeah, here we are. So, guys, sorry to...
That's okay.
...bore you with this, but here it is.
I think you need to...
There was another question, too. I'm trying to find it now.
I need to.
Can you guys see this?
There it is. Yeah.
Oh. Yeah. Right. So if you see, this is the connect. This where I'm pointing the mouse out is where you connect the antenna, and there's a mixer, right? It's just like a superhead receiver. There's a mixer where the clock comes in from the SI5351, which is what we use in all of the BITXs as well. It's a $1 chip, which generates three VFOs all the way to 200 megahertz. It's an amazing chip. So it converts this all these signals through this post-mix amplifier into a 25 megahertz signal. And then on the other side, instead of having a protect detector with a BFO, what you have is an AD8307, which is a very high accuracy log amp, meaning whatever signal you feed here, it gives a reading out in dBs. Okay, that's again read back by Arduino, and then you have an LCD display and an encoder. So it's a very simple circuit, if you see, right?
Mm-hmm.
But what it does is amazing because it allows you to tune to a particular frequency. Now, the regular SWR bridges are fairly simple. For example, the one which I have made several times over, which belong to, which has been designed by Dan, uses an LED for a detector, right? But the LED will glow at all harmonics. It'll even glow if there's a strong AM broadcast station nearby. Whereas here, because you're tuning to your own frequency that you're trying to measure, it stays very, you know, true to stuff. And this is, this up here is the resistive bridge for measuring the antenna SWR. And then you also have another clock out to do the sweeps, etc. So it's a very simple circuit, but what it does is it really amplifies your ability to homebrew and figure things out. So even if you don't have an oscilloscope, I think this is one instrument which you should have apart from multimeter to do your homebrewing. I'm taking this off the screen now. So, you know.
There we go. All right.
Yeah.
Well, the interesting work, all the things you do, Farhan, it's just amazing. And I just say keep it coming. You need to up your production. There's a lot of people in the chat room now that have just found out about this, and they're all wanting it.
Well, this is not yet in production. We did a small workshop with this, made about 100 of them at our Lamakan Amateur Radio Club's mm-hmm. annual meet. So we're just still ironing out a couple of things, but hopefully in a month or two we will have this up and about on HF signals as well. To make the main problem of trying to homebrew this on your own is to, you know, be able to solder the SI5351 by yourself. That's a challenge. It's always a challenge, but let's see how quickly we can get this into everyone's hands.
Okay. Well, look, I'd like to open the phone lines in just a minute in case people have some questions for you. Our phone lines, I was not able to be here to work the phone lines last week, and my operator was having trouble with it. We converted over to mm-hmm. something new, and none of us really knew how to operate it. So we're going to try it again tonight and see if I can get some phone numbers coming in, okay? So let's see if we can open the phone lines here. Before I do that, I want to show one thing here. Back to your MicroBix and your BITX40. This is kind of how simple it is. This is all your instructions. If you look, there's the board you get, and it shows you very clearly what you hook up. These are the external components that you get with it, and all you have to do is wire it up, just like this says right here. So it makes it really simple. And you've got close-up pictures of all the different pieces here and where the wires go. So the biggest part is making a case for it. And I always get the holes crooked when I make a case.
You know? That so looks like something I could even manage to build.
Yeah. Anybody could build it. It's so simple. But, Katie, you probably can do much more advanced projects than this.
Oh, I don't know. It's been a while since I've built anything. I do love to solder, though, so if there's soldering involved, I'm on it.
All right. I think the phones are open. Let me put the number up here. And, hey, maybe Bob, K6UDA, I know he's still out here. Maybe he'll call in and say hi. Let me get a phone number up here, see if I can figure out a place to put it where it doesn't block everybody too much. Let's try that right there. 712-775-7270. Hey, and guess what? We've got numbers now in 65 countries, Farhan. Let me see if we got a number in India. So we may have some people in India calling us here. Let's see. India. India's on there. 91-172-519-9043 in India. If you call that number, you can call the show. I'll put that number from India in a chat room because I think there's people in India watching tonight. So I'm gonna put sure. that number here.
I do have a question from the chat room, WB5ORT. My friend Ed is wondering if you have any idea yet on a price point for that new sweeper. Says he thinks it sounds like a great bit of a kit, and it sounded like you said something about you might have it available in a month or two for purchase, or you're not sure where you're at with it.
Yeah. It's available. The circuit is available, of course, already on my GitHub You know, if you just go to github.com/afarhan, the circuit is already available. And what I'd like to do is, you know, just not do this alone, but do this with a couple of accessories. For example, a two-tone generator and an RF sniffer and, you know, a couple of accessories to go along with this so that the entire, you know, set of accessories are together with this. I'm not sure when, but, you know, I would guess that the price would be fairly nominal. It's not a very costly thing to make. And we don't know how much these things are going to cost because some of these costs are varying now. The AD8307, which would cost about $2 until, you know, I started making this, has certainly started costing $11 on Mouser. So I have no idea where this is going. But we like to hold this down to, you know, less than about $100. Probably around $70 or $80. I think that's the price.
I think we've got a caller on the phone. Do we have a caller? Hello, caller. Hello. Well, let's just check this out here. Hello, caller. Let's try this one. That's interesting. This may have been the same problem we had last week. You know, I'm gonna have to get Josh to help us figure
this out. Josh is busy shopping here. I just told him on the chat room to step away from PayPal.
Oh, Very dangerous. Being okay. Here. Do we have anybody? Do we have anybody on the telephone? Anyone? Okay. I see two numbers: an area code 916 and a 716. But why not getting any audio from them? That's interesting.
VE7BE says that the BitX40 can easily be modified for 80 and 160 meters. Apparently, he's been playing around with it.
Yeah, people have taken that BITX40 and put it on other bands.
That's great.
Thank you. Okay, well, you know, we've got another call. Okay, is anyone on the telephone? Maybe I'm not working this right. I don't know. Let's see. It's not muted. They're not muted. But we're not hearing them. I'll check it out.
Testing out new technology here.
That will be working before the next show. It really will. I promise you that. Okay. We probably aren't taking any calls in.
We also got another question. Is there an SDR BitX project coming?
I am thinking about it, and as I mentioned earlier, I've been talking to a couple of people, you know, including Bob Larkin, W7PUA, about the possibility of a hybrid system that is, which combines the best of analog radios with SDR. The thing is that SDR has been a very enabling technology, allowing you to, I mean, it has completely redefined the landscape, right? I mean, if you look at a company like Flex Radio, it came out of nowhere, and it completely, you know, opened at the top of the charts, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you go to Rob Sherwood's site and you look at, you know, the top five radios now, they are all software-driven. So software has really, you know, changed the way you do radios. But that said and done, there is a lot of life still left in the analog technology. I mean, you know, it's like going back to vinyl. I mean, the pure joy of an analog radio, and I'm not exaggerating or being nostalgic about it, but the clarity of sound is very difficult to beat at all. So one of the things that I've been thinking about is to use the DSP in parallel with an analog system. And let me explain what I mean by this, is that if you have an overly processed audio coming out of the radio with too many active devices and, you know, too much of filtering, etc., it sounds pretty hollow and, you know, different from the natural sound of the radio. But on the other hand, for instance, you continue with your analog line, but you introduce a noise blanker, which is very intelligent, which is based on DSP, or you do an AGC, which is based on that, then that actually becomes very interesting, because then now what happens is you have the a clear path out from one end to the other, while you also have the ability to noise blank and do AGC and do all this other stuff. And plus, of course, the weak signal. So, you know, my ideal would be to have a DSP, which is easily upgradable inside the radio, not as a PC, you know, kept outside, but inside it. And now it's very easy to stuff it inside it because you have things like the Raspberry Pi, which cost about $5, less than $10. So I can easily imagine a replacement for our digital board. You know, where did I keep it? So if you look at this, right?
I think we may have some callers here. Let's take a break for a caller in just a minute.
Okay.
Do we have any callers on here now? Somebody? Hello? Somebody? It was actually in lecture mode, which means I think only I could talk. Let's see. Unmute.
Okay. Bob says he's on the conference bridge right now, or there's a couple people that are maybe on the conference bridge, so maybe they need to get merged in.
Yeah. Can anybody on the phone hear us?
Oh, they say we have a few guys on the phone, but we are all in conference, and Tom is not hearing us. So they're all talking together, so they probably need to be brought in individually and placed on the line.
That's the trouble we had last week where...
there's four of them. So yeah. They're all having their own show right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're having their own commentary about us.
Yeah. Oh, I don't know why I'm not hearing them. And I thought I had all this worked out. Let's see, mode, mute all, mode. Let's go back to that one. I don't know. Can anybody say anything?
I hear Josh's kids.
Sorry. Didn't mute.
Okay. All right, guys. I will figure the phone thing out later. Something I'm doing wrong here. The thing, and Josh, you probably know, it's got lecture mode and you can mute everybody and all that kind of stuff. So something's not right
here. Yeah, is there like a speaker next to each individual name, and can you click just the speaker and see if you can turn them on?
Well, I've got a microphone by everybody. Let's see. No, I've got a mic by everybody. Now it's unmute everybody. Something. I don't know. I'll figure it out next week, guys. Sorry about that. This is my fault. This is the problem we had last week. Okay.
Oh, someone said OG should fix it. Said the problem to Ask Dave.
Yeah. Okay. Well, they're all hearing us. Did someone say they are hearing us? Or are they just in conference with themselves?
I think just themselves.
Okay. All right. All right. So I will hang that up, and I'll do this real quick.
Next week we'll all have to practice and call you ahead of time.
Yeah, we'll have to check it out for sure. Okay. Well, I thought I would do something a little bit easier here. I was going to bring it. Well, no. Okay. My bad. All right. So, Farhan, you were showing us the board. And how the part fits on it.
Yeah. All I was saying is that, you know, you could well imagine that if you replace this board, this digital board, right? And you see that this, they're lined up here with the audio connector and took the audio connector into the DSP itself, you could have a digital backend for a Superhead radio. Mm-hmm. So I've been actively thinking about, doing something like that, except that I'm not very competent with SDR technologies myself. And hopefully I'll have, something going in the next couple of months, at least as an SDR backend to the Superhead radios.
All right. Boy, I was really hoping people would take some calls up for you. We'll have to have you on here again sometime, and I'll have you
Yeah.
Have you talk? Tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to do the old. Well, no, this is not going to work either. Can't do it. Sorry. We learn from our mistakes. How do we get the show back on track now? Katie, where's Katie? Katie, get the show back on track, Katie.
I'm here.
All right, let's get the show back on track here. I'm sorry for the interruptions. The phones just, they're connected. They're in conference. It's just we're not getting the audio. And I checked it before the show, and I was getting the audio. So I don't know what's exactly wrong. But anyway,
that'll
be fixed next week. Well, hey, let's talk about next week just for a second. I'm not going to be here next week. Josh is going to have the show and run it from California.
Uh-oh.
Oh, man.
Somebody's in trouble.
Everybody's in trouble. The new kid's taking over.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. I'm running the show tomorrow. I don't know what I'm going to do, per se, but if you want to give me show ideas, and in fact, I'll probably post a poll over on the Ham Radio Crash Course Facebook group, and I'll take your opinions, and we'll vote for whatever the most likely thing is or the highest voted, and we'll go with that.
Okay.
That seems like a fun way to do it.
Like I told Josh, he's got the show next week, whatever he wants to talk about. You know, it's his show next week, so I will be down. I already have seen Hamcation. Katie, when are you getting back home? You're going to be back?
I'll be back Sunday night, but not sure if I'm going to be running out to go do some babysitting for my granddaughter.
Yeah.
So I'll have to let you know. I got to get that worked out.
if Josh, I don't know if Josh is going to have any remote co-host on or not, but it's him. He'll figure it out. We're paying.
Yeah,
him.
I mean, I would love the contact info in case I got to reach out to y'all and see if I need the help. I'll gladly take it.
Yeah.
We're paying him big bucks, just like we're paying, you know, right. Dave and Katie, so he can make decisions next week on what to do. Now I will be back. For the show the next week. That will be the 12th. That will be the 19th. I'll be back for that show. By the way, hey, the show next week, guys, is my birthday. February 12th is my birthday, so that's going to be interesting for us there. Going to go on a cruise right after Hamcation. Going to be on a quick cruise. And Farhan, if you could stay a minute, don't go away. I'm sorry we got off the subject, but maybe some questions will come in the chat room for you. I know there's been a bunch of questions, and we'll try to read those to you. I just want to mention here, I didn't get a chance to mention last week, but our show is planning the high altitude balloon launch. There we go, right there. We're planning on putting a balloon up. We want it to be somewhere between 40,000, 45,000 feet. And we had the godfather of high altitude ballooning on, Bill Brown, last week or the week before. He's had over 500 launches. And our goal here is for the show, put a balloon up for the show. We're going to track it with Whisper. I think we're going to have Whisper on it. We're going to use the sushi wrap balloon, I think. That's the little bit better balloon. Hopefully we'll use hydrogen. We'll have his sky tracker on it. And it's possible for some of these balloons to circle the Earth for 1 year maybe make 30 or 40 revolutions around the Earth. So we don't know how long. It might go 1 day and come down. The secret here is you have to avoid storms. If you put it up and if it gets into a storm, then you got problems. When you get in a storm, it's going to come down. So we're going to get the expert to launch it. Hopefully we can get it up to altitude above the storms, get it at 40,000 feet. And I've started a page up. Let's see. I'm not sure where my balloon page is. That's not it there. That's not it. So I've started a page called Balloons. It's on our website here. And if you'll just check at the upper menu for Balloons, we're going to have a map in here where we track the balloon every week, where you can see where the balloon is. Hey, if you want to get your name on to be a supporter on the left side of the page, if you want to donate $10 to building and launching this thing, $10 to get your name on as a show supporter. for getting this balloon in the air. We hope it goes a year. That's what I'm shooting for, you know, trying to go for a year with it. We may not make it, but again, you could find some information on the balloon tab. We don't have the correct link in for the tracking map yet. It's kind of neat, the Whisper, the little Whisper transmitter and the GPS. It's got a 34-foot antenna on it, 17 feet above it and 17 feet below it. And it's like number 34 wire. It's very, very small. So this is going to be kind of exciting to do. So that's about all the announcements that I had that I wanted to get in. It's something we didn't get in last week. So let's get back to our thing here. Any questions real quick? Let's see if anybody's got any questions.
Yeah.
And we'll relay.
It was something in the chat. It was asking Ashar, if the version 5 UBIT X boards are ready to ship, or I think you mentioned that when you first started talking, and I don't know where you were at with that.
Well, yes, they are. We will probably start shipping them in a day or two, but the boards are here. Yes, that's right.
So I know a guy who just bought one. If he just bought it like 30 minutes ago, is he going to get the new board?
The new board.
Okay.
That's the one you're going to get.
All right. So
okay,
Josh,
I'll let him know. He's very excited.
Josh, look, he's going to hold your board up. Look, Josh, he's holding your board up.
Oh, there's yours, Josh. Yeah.
That's our
okay,
board.
Excellent. Good.
Let me write down your name on this so that they know that this is the board.
Right. There we go. Thank you.
Oh, man. See, there's a lot of perks. In addition to the high bucks we pay, there are a lot of perks to the show. especially yeah. Time off and vacations. Anytime you need to be off, just let me. Not a problem. NESC.
Oh. Sorry, was that a question for me?
Let's see. There were some questions in the very beginning, but I lost the chat room and had to log back in. I forget what the questions were. Maybe they'll resend them. I can't remember what they were. But, hey,
scroll back far enough.
Yeah. You might be able to go back, Katie, kind of toward the very beginning of the show. There was
because I got bumped once also. So I go back to about when N3VE left for the night.
Oh, okay. All right. There was before that. But, Farhan, we always have a great time when you come on here with us. There's a lot of people. I'm sure there's a lot of the Facebook group people that follow you and the BITX 40 and so forth. I know they were all right over here tonight. This is just a great, great project.
Think it's great that you log in and join us from India. It's such an honor to have you join us. And you're like the rock star of the show tonight. Everyone's really excited in the chat room to have you join us.
Okay,
Farhan,
they want the city you're in.
I live in the southern part of India, south central actually, called Hyderabad. It's an old city, about 400 years old.
Yeah.
It's a remarkable city, and I'd like to just take a minute to talk to you about the city itself.
Sure.
You know, I mean, all it's 400 years old, and there are parts of it which are still 400 years old, like a European city. You know, you could go around there, eat some traditional Indian food, etc. But there's a new city, which, you know, the locals call as the high-tech city, where there's just, I mean, you know, on one road, okay, on one street, you have Microsoft, Facebook, Amazon, Google, they're all just on one street, right? And they have some of the biggest development centers outside the US. And so Hyderabad is actually a hub of the software development centers. And there are probably about, you know, 100,000 to 200,000 people who just work on these companies. So that's actually the, you know, one, in quotes, happening place of Hyderabad. But the other important thing is that there are probably about 200 or 300 engineering colleges around Hyderabad. And, you know, these are the kids who are always making some projects for the semester papers, etc. So there are a number of component shops in Hyderabad, which are very, very, I'm really lucky to be living in a city like that. And each time I need some component or the other, of course, not RF components, I can just, you know, drive down to this place, which is about 20, 25 minutes away from here, and buy the component and come back and, you know, start the work all over again. So, for instance, we were working on a rotator, right? An antenna rotator for satellites. And I thought that instead of having these encoders, et cetera, to find out where you are and to position the antenna around, it might be a good idea to put a magnetometer on it, which is an electronic compass, which will tell you which way the your beam is headed in the azimuth. And for elevation, you could do an accelerometer, right? So we had this idea yesterday morning, and by afternoon we had these components here. And you know, we started fiddling around with this yesterday evening. You're halfway there, but you know, so you have this ability to really get these components in very quickly. And we have a bunch of homebrewers, about 7 or 8 of them in the city, whose junk boxes are always available for each other. So you know, if you've blown up a transistor, you need something else, it's pretty accessible. So that's the long story about the city and, you know, how it affects ham radio here.
Hey, Farhan, spell the city again. I may have it spelled wrong on my lower third here.
So let me spell it to you on the chat. So okay. And it's H Hotel Yankee Delta Echo Radio Alpha Bravo Alpha Delta. It's Hyderabad.
D-E-R. Okay, I left an A out on the little thing under your face there, your name in city. I left an A out.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Someone has been asking for the satellite rotator. Firstly, the project is not yet complete. Let me actually show you what's complete here. It's interesting because it's halfway through. So this is the rotator, right? So this actually holds like that. So there is one motor here. It's a simple DC motor, a 1 RPM motor, and that's connected to this platform here. So this platform sort of rotates this way, and onto that you have a second motor connected, which has this stuff here. And being pretty incompetent with mechanical work, this is actually something that we 3D printed right here. It took us the whole night to print this. And onto this, we will be, you know, attaching an Arduino, and that will have the magnetometer attached to this, which is an HNC5883L, and an accelerometer, which measures the gravity tilt, right? So you'll know what it's tilting at. So you know, this, the entire thing costs about probably $15 or $20 to put this whole thing together.
Get
these things printed out.
Is that strong enough? Is that strong enough to maybe mount something like a aero satellite beam?
Yes. Yeah. That's the idea, to you know, do something like an aero. I have a homebrew aero somewhere in the back. So the idea is to basically be able to slip that through, or a tape measure antenna. You know, tape measure is really the antenna that I like, because you can fold it up like an umbrella. So you know, you have this and the tape measure all put together in a very small box, which you can carry around with you,
well,
and set it up
great
for demonstrations or park.
That's great, because a lot of these rotors, there's not many out there for satellite with the azimuth elevation. They cost anywhere from $400 to $1,000. You know, and
I bought a G5500 for about probably $1,000.
Yeah. So this is a cost breaker here. You'll be able to.
Well, this is not the first one. SatNOGS has something similar, and I've seen something similar in a number of places. But the cool thing is, with a 3D printer, you can print all this stuff out. You know, look at that. That's a knob that I did yesterday. So I have a Prusa Mark II now in the shack, and that really helps me to, you know, get these things out quickly.
Okay. Any other questions? Let's look through the chat real quick. We'll probably end the show here in a minute. Farhan, if people would like to get in contact with you, do you want to share an email or anything? How's the best way for them to contact you?
Yeah, so the best way really is on the BITX group. There is a BITX 20 group. It's called the BITX 20 because that's how it started out about 15 years ago. It's on groups.io. So if you just head to http://groups.io or www.groups.io and search for the BITX 20 group, that's where I hang out. And, you know, I check that at least about twice a day. My email is on the group as well, which is farhanbox@gmail.com. But I have a large amount of emails coming in, and I'm particularly bad replying to emails, which is why, you know, if it's in the group, it's much easier because I, you know, anything which is directed to me at the group, I do answer it back because, you know, more than anything else, I'll be shamed if I don't do it on the group because everyone is seeing that you've written to me. So yeah. That's actually the best way to get in touch with me.
Okay. Well, great. Well, you've surely stirred up a lot of interest in a lot of people out here. And this is the kind of show we like to have where we can get something out there that's exciting and get a lot of people involved in this. And again, thank you so much, Farhan, for coming on. And we'll have you on again soon.
Sure. And thank you, guys. You know, Josh, good to finally catch up with you.
Katie, absolutely. And, it was great talking to you.
Yep. And thank you for having me on show. It's been a pleasure, and you know, it's very exciting to see all these guys who are here.
Yeah, and just one last, when's the next time you're coming to the U.S., and will you be like at Hamvention or anywhere?
Well, I'll certainly be there for the 4 days in May. I already have registered. Okay. So I'm going to be at Dayton as well. And you know, that's where I'll probably catch up with all you guys.
Okay, well, we're in building two. Don't go anywhere without finding us. So we'll Josh, Katie, myself, you'll find us in building two there probably.
Okay.
All right, well, thanks so much.
We'll
let you go sleep.
Have a great day. We're all going to bed now.
Yeah, good night. Good night, Farhan.
Good night, everybody.
Take it easy. I'm going to go finish up New Year's now.
Yeah.
All right, guys. All right. Bye, Josh. Well, I'll tell you what.
Bye-bye. Happy New Year. Bye-bye.
I think it was a great show tonight. Thank you, Josh. Thank you, Katie. Looks like Dave maybe has already signed off. And I'll bring Hangout. I'm going to bring Hangout up for